This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 12th of April, 1957. The title of this lecture is Control Processes. It is Radiation and Your Survival, tape number 4. Copyright 1957 by L. Ron Hubbard in the United Kingdom. Copyright 1978 by L. Ron Hubbard in the USA. All rights reserved. Unauthorized translation, duplication, importation, and distribution is a violation of applicable laws. This tape is 57 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Thank you very much.
Well, has the Congress begun yet?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Now, I'm going to make some people sorry if they didn't come. So this time, why, we will have to take up something far more significant than we just took up. Because, actually, what we just took up, well, it's minor. We just solved the basic problem of the ages. And find out what we're mostly agreed on, you know. And that's really not very much to take up an hour. And we'll get down to it. Really get down to it now. I will take up the remaining factor. I really did talk about communication, if seen from the viewpoint of radiation, in the first hour, and then I took up control. There's been a lot of argument about control, you know. Terrific amount of argument. First time control was sprung on a bunch of Scientologists, they said, "Meow, no." And I said, "But so and so." They said, "Ron, we've lived with you through black and white. We have suffered with you through creative processing. We have even gone so far as to walk around endlessly all over London. But now, Ron, you've gone too far. It's too much." And I said, "Well, I've never asked you to really do anything for my sake before. Just for me." I said, "Half of you run the other half on control. This way. Give me your hand. Thank you. Give me your hand. Thank you. Give me your hand. Thank you." Of course, these boys have lived through op-probe by dupe, so they could do such a thing. They said, "What happens if the fellow says, well, I just got a cognition?" You say, "Give me your hand. Thank you." So you don't acknowledge? No, we've gotten up to a point where we can even violate dummy auditing in the COM formula. "Oh, you don't even acknowledge anything the fellow says while you're doing this?" I said, "You'd better not, because you'll be talking to nothing but circuits. Give me your hand. Thank you. Give me your hand. Thank you. Wow. All right. For your sake, Ron, we'll do this. Give me your hand. Thank you. Give me your hand. Thank you. Give me your hand. Thank you. What's those? Give me your hand. Thank you. And they all of a sudden found themselves making faster gain. And they grabbed a couple of cases that had no results. And, "Give me your hand, thank you. Give me your hand, thank you." And they said, "Hooray! It's good for the auditing room. But no place else." Then they went out. Fellow had been, they'd been trying to buy vegetables and things from this fellow for a long time. And they would say, Have you got some turnips, you know, or have you got some of this?" And he would say, "Well, I'm all out today." And how about some coffee? "Well, I'm all out today." "How about some razor blades? I'm all out today, you know." And they went down, and he had everything they asked for, and he offered them no argument and chit-chat. And how'd they manage that? Do you know, I even think you could handle a rationing board now. You could probably go down and get petrol stamps by the bucketful. They would say, "Have some more petrol stamps. Have some more. Have some more, you know. Have some more."
So we come into havingness. And that is the third factor of the trio. ARC, Infinity Reality and Communication, becomes Control, Communication, and Havings on an upper look. We are now looking at Axiom 3, and all of these are Axiom 3. And so they run out, Axiom 10 and all lower axioms. And by actual test, you will be able to determine and establish this with considerable ease. This is an easy one for you to determine. Everything we're talking about in this Congress is something that you can do rather easily. For instance, tomorrow I will be talking about a chemical compound. You can run the experiment on this chemical compound and find that it violates the pharmacopoeia, the authority on the reaction of chemicals on the human body, is not correct. So don't be surprised if a few other things are found to be incorrect all of a sudden, such as control is bad. That's incorrect. The best thing that this society knows about control is attempted sometimes. Good positive knowledge. Well, that's an entirely different thing than control. We have something entirely new in man. We have a way of control which does control without man's introducing a great many lies, punishments, or anything else. And we find then that when control is done from this level, that life becomes possible, bearable, and understandable. And it isn't below that point. It becomes a confusion and a mess. All right. Now we look over at this point called havingness, and we find out that an understanding of this oversets many traditions. Everybody knows that the only way that you could ever get anybody to do anything is to make everything scarce. That's the best way to do that. You just make everything scarce. There must be an upper class and a lower class. And the lower the lower class can be put, the more work you get out of them. Everybody knew that here a half a century ago. Everybody knew that. If you really wanted to get anything done in the society, you had to have hewers of wood and drawers of water, is what they used to call them. And these people could only be on a slave level. Since the Roman Empire, we have known conclusively that slaves were necessary in the society. And we have known how to make a slave. You just don't let him have a single thing that you can possibly keep away from him. You don't let him have good quarters, or clothes, or food. And you beat him up and chew him out. You let him have no status with regard to the state. He mustn't be permitted to vote. None of these things are allowable to a slave. And if we deny him enough havingness, then we will have to have that very necessary item called the hewer of wood and the drawer of water, without which the society cannot do. That's more or less the way it's been. We've had to grab somebody and then deny him havingness so we could have him. Now let's look at this from another quarter. If we have a slave, do we have anything? Nope. And thus went Greece, and thus went Rome, and thus went the industrial empire-type civilization of England and America, because it's pretty nearly gone now. America, you know, used to be twice as colonial as England. Imperialistic policies abroad. Very interesting thing that these things have all sort of disappeared. Only they disappeared on the wrong side of the ledger, you might say. It's a liability that they happened. That's different than kind of losing something. It's too bad it ever existed, and now we have lost it. Look, did anybody have anything when they had a slave country? Well, obviously, they couldn't have had very much if they found it impossible to retain. So their havingness of it must have been very nebulous. And so it was. You always had to have troops going up and down and surrounding the barracks and policing the town, policing the capital, one way or the other, in order to keep these slaves in check. Because the slaves, the more they were denied havingness, insisted on having something, which was unreasonable of them and was not expected and was not posted as part of the game they were supposed to be playing. They were supposed to sit there and knit or tat or go out there and hew wood and draw water, and that's all they were supposed to do. And you know what these fellows did? They kept insisting that they had something. Now, their revolt is the biggest engram on the track of modern civilization, and it came from the Middle East to Greece to Rome to our present society, where it's more or less faded out. Now, what's this idea that you have to have a slave, have somebody, in order to own other things? You've got to have somebody hewing wood and drawing water and so forth. Well, the boys are to this moment still trying to solve that problem, only now they want to solve it in an entirely different way. Popular Electronics in the United States has just published an article culled from the greatest universities of the world, not just American. And this article tells exactly the experiments which have been run of putting electronic electrodes in people's heads and giving them orders, stimuli, so that to get responses to get them to work. It goes on and on and on about how you do this, and thereafter you will have a worker. You cut holes in people's skulls and put electrodes in and stimulate certain things, and he has an electronic switchboard radio thing in his pocket, and you turn a dial over here and this human robot goes around and does something. He hews wood and draws water. And this, these fellows think, is feasible, merely because it is electronically possible. And just because slavery was possible back through the ages, they thought it was feasible. Just because you could make a slave, they thought you should have a slave. In order to get work done, you had to have slaves. If there's anything crossed up on our modern civilization track, it is that one. That work is done by slaves. And that we have to deny people things in order to keep them working. We have to make wages scarce. We have to make things hard to buy. We have to make ownership very difficult. Or else we get no super control of the masses. That is the very way we get revolting masses. We deny them enough, and pretty soon they turn the tables the other way. First time they did this was in the 1780s, to any great degree in modern civilization, over in France. And it was enough that you had a pair of pants, if you please, to be indelicate, to go to the guillotine. If you just owned a decent pair of pants or a pair of shoes or something like that, somebody would point at you and say, "Aristocrat!" And the tumbles would roll, and the widow would go bunk, and they would basket one skull down to the nearest lime pit. Why? Headings. Upset concerning. This gives us an explanation of everything that has happened on the track. Why does it give us an explanation? Why? How can we apply this so broadly? We say there are other factors. There was control and communication. Yeah, but we say there were other factors than having this control and communication which made the civilized idiosyncrasies which we have witnessed down through the passage of history. There were various philosophies of politics, all these philosophies of politics which were considerably thought out and German, and there was communism, and there was Voltairism, and all these other factors were responsible for the social evils which we finally behold. Oh, no, they weren't. They were the figure people went into when they'd lost things. That's communism. Communism is just an effort by a bunch of commissars to have, at the expense of a bunch of slaves who are kept in a have-not. Oh, but do you say that's not the definition of it? I don't care what the definition of it was. This is the fact of it. This is what it looks like when you see it up close, at work, in the countries where it is working. And that's all that counts. That's all that counts. All that really counts about Scientology is, or anything else, or any other chain of thought. All that counts about Scientology is whether or not in those areas where it is being applied, and with those people where it is being applied, are they living a better life, a healthier, a happier life than they lived without it? And if the answer is yes, then it's a good thing. And if the answer is no, then it's not. You see, the final application, now you can always make something better, you can improve it, you can communicate it better, you can shape it up so that it's more workable, more usable, but in the final analysis, it is the area of operation of a thing, not the thing which counts, as far as philosophy is concerned. If communism worked, Russia would be the greatest manufacturing nation on earth. If colonial imperialism worked, the United States today would rule the entirety of North and South America. So we're looking at old dead philosophies. They haven't worked. Because any nation that was made a part of another nation by force, duress, and slavery proved a liability to it so great that the owning nation was sooner or later happy to get rid of it. There was a war which almost destroyed the United States, called in the South the War of the Rebellion, the war between the states, called in the North the Civil War. An interesting war, since it was the first time the United States had gone into this convulsion, and so it found it an intriguing phenomenon, a phenomenon it had never before experienced. England had been through this in a dozen ways, France, older nations. But it was new, strange, and peculiar to the United States, and therefore they're sort of stuck on the track about it. And this war was a bloody one. And the funny part of it is, the heartbreaking part of it is, that it was fought between the North, which thought the South shouldn't have slaves, and the South, which had found out the South couldn't possibly have slaves. And they were both in total agreement, but they fought a war without finding it out. Since 1835, most of the states of the South had been trying to agitate legislation through their legislatures to let them free a few slaves and to get off this slave economy. And their main worry was simply this, that each planter's capital was tied up in a great many pieces of humanity which were paid for by gold dollars. And therefore, they wanted a return on their investment. So merely to free them would have brought economic chaos in the South. So their argument was, somebody ought to pay us for these slaves. We already know that it is an unworkable social activity. And the North was probably fighting the South without even knowing too much of this. But certainly it would have paid the North to have paid the South for its slaves. And there would have been no civil war and everybody would have been happy. Except for this fact, man had been made into a slave. He had been a slave. The Negro in the South had been taken from his homeland and had been pressed down into slavery, had been denied any semblance of humanity in the current literature. It's quite amazing to find a debate as to whether or not a Negro has a soul. Ridiculous sort of thing. Should he have any right to go to church? He should have no right to go to church because of so-and-so. Here's a totally debased philosophy that was brought into the country in the early days of no labor, which everyone knew was to some degree wrong. Because it is not true that a Negro is a lower being. It is not true that a Negro is born to slavery. The only places where a Negro has any difficulty is where educational advantages and civilization advantages have been denied him. In other words, his havingness has been reduced to such a point that the struggle for life becomes so desperate that he can do no other thing than to eke out an existence with no higher attainment than maybe a bowl of rice or gruel. His havingness is so bad that he cannot pull himself up without help. Only where he has been depressed to a point where it is impossible for him to pull himself up without help. And so the Negro had been brought over from Africa, and he was brought into this area of the United States called the South. His slavery was continued, and a have-not was played on him. He couldn't own a thing. That is the first definition of a slave. He is a person who is owned and who does not own. The moment that slaves can own private property, they are no longer slaves, so most slave-owning societies deny the slave the right to own any private property of any character. All of his private property belongs to the master. This is one of the basic definitions of a slave. And here were these people, brought in, depressed into slavery, denied cultural advantages, and then, if you please, suddenly and ferociously freed, without any real economic aid or support. And the do-gooders just cut them loose, and that was that. No great program of education was engaged in. Nobody tried hard to make this freedom real. The United States government used to talk about giving them 40 acres and a mule. So they'd give somebody 40 acres and a mule, but his trouble was trying to feed his wife and his kids. So what did he do? What did he have to do? He sold 40 acres and the mule to the first Reconstruction white man that he ran into. He got nothing out of this but a few dollars with which to live for a few days. It was a program that was all awry from the very first. And to this moment, we still have this convulsion in the United States, although the slaves have been free for 90 years. Clinton, a little town, very short time ago, had National Guardsmen running around in jeeps with machine guns mounted on their cowls. Why? Because people objected to Negroes having an education. Negro schools were bad. White schools were already crowded. Without solving the white school crowding, they suddenly put all the Negro children into the white schools too. The Negro schools were very poor. Here was a have-not again. In other words, they continued to run have-not on these people, decade after decade after decade. They can't get over this idea of they mustn't have. Wage scales are in their disfavor and so forth. Do you understand this? We're getting some kind of an attitude here toward a certain group of people that they mustn't have any more than they have. But because we don't give them any more than they have, they stay then in a liability in the middle of the society. Here's a fascinating problem. We have started to run a have-not upon a group of people. And their problems and difficulties are still with us, although they have been, quote, free, unquote, for 90 years. Listen, Greece tried to free its slaves. Rome tried to free its slaves. And Great Britain at this moment is trying madly to get rid of slave states that it enslaved with the torch. It's trying to say, no, no, no. You go ahead and rule yourselves. Self-determinism. Get over there and rule yourself. We don't want anything more to do. It's just too much trouble to listen to just one more person who gets out there in the public square and who says something on the order of, natives of Tuna Shabasha, arise tomorrow and drive out the usurper. You know, it's just commotion, 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 commotion. And the moment one of these people has been freed without any further havingness, without any further reorientation, without any further education, she has at once revolted against her conqueror. And so Great Britain has had continual trouble with every one of these countries that it has freed, and every time it frees one, it'll continue to have trouble. That's for sure. We tried to free Cyprus. Cyprus would smash it in the face. Of course, it's not a very serious thing. Few people like that, ill-armed, so forth, striking back at anyone. But it certainly is unsettling. You're trying now to be the great civilizer, and the people just refuse to consider themselves, you know, cut loose. They keep saying, you did this and you did that, and we need this and we need that, and you give us economic aid, and we'll give you back the fact that we're free, and see what a dreadful mix-up this thing is. Why is it a dreadful mix-up? It's because somebody embarked upon the course of no have back on the track someplace with a certain group, and without a reorientation is then unable to free themselves of that slavery. Unless somebody can solve this problem, there is no such thing as freeing anyone anywhere. If we run a have-not continually, on and on and on, we run have-not, have-not, have-not on some group, and all of a sudden say, well, we're ashamed of ourselves now. We won't do this anymore. Look, you people, you're free. Go on. Here's a couple of guns so that you can police yourselves. And they say, thank you. Boo! And we say, why did they do that? We're being human. We're being nice. We're being kind, good. Every time you try to free some pre-clear circuits, you get the same kickback. You say, we're going to fix you up so you won't be sick anymore. We're going to audit you and so forth. Well, a pre-clear who isn't in too terrible condition, audited rather smoothly, of course, always says, boy, do I feel better. Isn't this nice? What do you know? A wall, you know? He plays the game. He comes along. He snaps out. He becomes more able, and he becomes an asset, a bigger asset to his environment. But listen, you're auditing the people who are walking up to your front door, and I'm willing to tell you right now that the rest of the society isn't going to walk up to your front door because they're not that smart. We even run a not-have on people, professional auditors, the Hossie and the rest of it, of necessity. We say, if you haven't some pounds, you don't get processed. Why are we doing that? Well, the reason we're doing that is because it's a medium of exchange and agreement. You say, we're in the middle of this society too, and we have to spend and earn, we have to live. We have to pay wages in the Hossie. You, we have to pay room rent. We have to eat. Oh, but is this really a have-not? Is this really a have-not? No, because we're barely within reason. We're within reason. You see? It is possible for somebody to work for a while and get that amount of money and pay for some processing. That is possible. That can happen. So that is not a violent have-not, is it? And it isn't, because it's in the field of feasibility. Then what do we mean by have-not? Well, let's add it up this way. Never have. There are certain things which you must not have, that you cannot have, and that you will never be given. Now, that's the aberrative one. Now, I'm afraid you field auditors and in the Hossie should never feel very sad about taking some money away from people. Quite the contrary. The fact that they can pay you for some auditing lets them contribute to the situation. And the funny part of it is, if you don't permit them to contribute, they feel that they themselves are have-nots. And you re-stimulate them onto a charity basis, and they refuse to get well. And an auditor who does not select pay for auditing has more trouble with these pre-clears than auditors who elicit pay for auditing. Because it's a possible have, don't you see? It's possible for this exchange to occur. Well, now, a never have is something else. You must not have freedom. You cannot have equality with the aristocracy, they said in Greece. You cannot have full freedom, they said in the Roman Empire. A freedman has certain rights, and these are. And believe me, they didn't come up to a citizen. See, they were just running this on a sort of a total. We get along a little bit further, and we find in most states that have run this sort of thing that a man had to have a certain amount of property before he could vote for a member of the Senate or something. He had to have property before he could be enfranchised by the state. And that is one of the oldest forms of voting enfranchisement. He had to have the ability to own property. Well, a freedman could not own that much property by law. You didn't have any... No, he hadn't been given anything then, had he? He had never been given any self-determinism in the state. In other words, he was persisting in a state of slavery. And there you have the people who were out there who will never walk up to you. They will never come near you. Not because they haven't got, can't get the pounds. It's because mentally they're totally educated to a point where they can't even have help. They can't have. They can't have you. They can't have your services. They can't have anything else connected with freedom. And their only answer is, well, if we can't have it, destroy it. So they argue against you. They argue against the state. They argue against officials and everything else. You see how they do this? They can't have it all. And the answer to that is destroy it.